Today is Thursday, May 7th, and this is the World Socialist Website. What is it about the Met Fashion Gala that leads one to think fondly of the guillotine? By David North. The leprosy of unreality disfigured every human creature in attendance. From A Tale of Two Cities. So wrote Charles Dickens of the French aristocracy on the eve of the Great Revolution. The words apply with undiminished force to the attendees at the 2026 Met Gala, an annual display of self-congratulation at which the American oligarchy and its hired entertainers gather to admire themselves. The 2026 edition was bought, paid for, and presided over by Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder and world's third richest man, owner and political enforcer of the Washington Post, together with his wife, Lauren Sanchez Bezos. A check for $10 million, a rounding error in a fortune estimated at between $223 and $279 billion, purchased the couple their seats as honorary co-chairs. The wealth that Bezos now distributes in such gestures was extracted, dollar by dollar, from the broken backs of warehouse workers urinating in bottles to make rate. Outside the museum, protesters projected the slogan, "Boycott the Bezos Met Gala," onto the Bezos' $80 million Madison Square Park penthouse. The guests inside, consumed as their own self-image, evidently did not consider that the conditions which produced their wealth and the conditions which produced the protest were one and the same. Vulgarity is too mild a word for what unfolded on the steps of the museum, since vulgarity implies a coarse vitality. The 2026 gala was a pageant of decay so far gone in self-parody that one struggled to know whether to laugh, vomit, or check out eBay for a working replica of Dr. Guillotine's invention. The noted wit Dorothy Parker once deadpanned, "If you want to know what God thinks of money, look at the people he gives it to." Here are a few examples that proved Parker's point. A reality television heiress arrived in a custom Schiaparelli rubberized bodysuit with sculpted nipples beneath a ballooning satin skirt embroidered with 10,000 Baroque pearls and 7,000 hand-painted fish scales. The garment, by the house's own admission, required 11,000 hours of embroidery, the equivalent of more than 5 years of a working woman's full-time labor for a single evening's wear. Her older sister appeared in a metallic orange breastplate conceived by a British pop artist and finished in an actual auto body shop, featuring cone bras lifted from Jean-Paul Gaultier. A pop singer, born in Michigan and old enough to know better, mounted the steps in a Saint Laurent ensemble accompanied by women in sheer blindfolds, wearing a hat fitted with observers compared to a ship's mast, carrying a brass trumpet, and trailing a violet organza cape so vast that seven attendants were required to manage it. The fashion press, fully in sync with the aristocratic pretensions, called these women her ladies-in-waiting. The hostess herself, the billionaire's wife who last year purchased an 11-minute trip to the edge of space aboard her husband's vanity rocket, appeared in a Schiaparelli gown, said to be inspired by John Singer Sargent's Madam X. Bad taste competed with brainlessness. An actress with a cage strapped to her backside. A singer immobilized inside a sculpture she could barely walk in. A Chanel gown that, Condé Nast's own organs proudly reported, had absorbed 761 hours of atelier labor. The official theme was costume art. The actual theme was money. And the working principle of the evening was that there exists no quantity of human labor too great to be expended on the four-hour amusement of the rich. A single seat at the 2026 gala cost $100,000, raised from $75,000 the year before. A table of 10 ran $350,000, The 400 or so attendees thus consumed, between tickets alone, some $42 million, which the museum reports as a record fundraising achievement. The costumes themselves, lent by the fashion houses as marketing investments, and routinely valued in the hundreds of thousands of dollars each, are not counted in that figure. Rihanna's 2015 Gaultier gown reportedly cost nearly $4 million to produce. A single Schiaparelli gown represents more labor time than a New York City public school teacher will perform in 3 full school years. It is then worn for 4 hours, photographed, and returned to the atelier from which it came. This is what the ruling class understands by the support of the arts. The whole performance is treated by the press with the gravity of a state occasion. The New York Times, the Washington Post, Vogue, the broadcast networks, and their streaming subsidiaries devote acres of coverage to the event, broadcast live red carpet feeds, and convene panels of solemn commentators to parse the year's theme as though something of cultural significance were transpiring. Fashion editors discuss a rubberized bodysuit in vocabulary that was once reserved for a Manet or Renoir. The conditions outside the velvet rope are inseparable from those within it. While the bodysuit was being adjusted by handlers, the New York City shelter system was housing more than 100,000 people. While Bezos was writing his $10 million check, Amazon warehouse workers were collapsing at injury rates that exceed those of the rest of the warehousing industry combined. While the Schiaparelli Atelier was cutting the hostess gown, the Trump administration was announcing that the United States can no longer afford daycare, health care, or Social Security, though it can afford $1.5 trillion for the military. The connection between these two worlds is all too real. The wealth on display at the Met Gala is the wealth that raked in over 4 decades of class war waged from above. The Metropolitan Museum itself, founded in 1870, custodian of the Egyptian Temple of Dendera, of paintings by Rembrandt and Vermeer and El Greco, of 5,000 years of human creative labor, has been reduced to a stage prop. Government funding accounts for perhaps 8 to 10% of its operating budget. The remainder is supplied by precisely the donors who showed up on Monday and displayed their decadence. And then there is Bezos himself. The Washington Post, under his ownership, now functions as cheerleader for Donald Trump's fascistic regime and genocidal war. This modern-day Ozymandias bellows to the world, "I am Bezos, billionaire of billionaires. Look upon my works, ye mortals, and puke." The phony dissent surrounding the event was as nauseating as the event itself. New York's newly elected mayor, Zohran Mamdani, whose vision of a socialist utopia is focused on filling the city's potholes with asphalt, distanced himself physically from the gala, but did not condemn it. Mamdani excused his absence on grounds of affordability, as though the gala were a pricey restaurant rather than a ritual celebration of the social order he was elected to confront. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, several years earlier, had pioneered the art of hypocritical gestures by attending the gala in a tax-the-rich gown. It was an attempt to critique Versailles from a seat at Marie Antoinette's table. Various celebrities this year issued furrowed-brow statements about Bezos, and then turned up anyway, smiled for the cameras, ate the food, and posted the pictures. The Met Gala is a ritual whose purpose is to make the rule of the billionaires appear glamorous and somehow deserved. What the spectacle communicates, in the only language this class still speaks fluently, is contempt for the overwhelming mass of the city's population. As for the guillotine, we have referenced it only for satirical purposes. The question that opens this article, however, is a real one. The filthy rich can keep their empty heads, but not their money. Expropriation of the mega millionaires and billionaires is a social necessity. The United States is controlled by an oligarchic ruling class that is as shameless as it is brutal. It has rendered itself intolerable by its own conduct. Society cannot afford the rich. The working class will have to separate them from their bank accounts. Thank you. 1 year of the Merz government, war, militarism, and social devastation, by Johannes Stern. 1 year after the Merz-Klingbeil government took office, one thing is clear. It is the most right-wing and hated government in the history of the Federal Republic. It is implementing a rearmament program comparable only to the military buildup of the Nazi regime on the eve of the Second World War. It is destroying social rights, inciting attacks on refugees, strengthening the neo-fascist Alternative for Germany, or AfD, and preparing the whole of society for war. For this, it is hated. According to a recent poll by the Forza Institute, satisfaction with the federal government has reached a historic low. According to the RTL-NTV Trend Barometer, only 13% of the population are still satisfied with Merz's work, while 85% express dissatisfaction. The assessment of the federal government as a whole is even worse. Only 11% rate its work positively, while 87% rate it negatively. Rejection is especially high among young people between 18 and 29, and among workers and the self-employed. In each of these groups, 95% express dissatisfaction. Merz was elected chancellor on May 6, 2025, in the second round of voting, an unprecedented historical event that underscored from the very beginning the instability and extreme right-wing character of the new government. The weakness did not make it more cautious, but more aggressive. Its central task is to enforce the program of the ruling class: war abroad, class war at home. Even before taking office, the governing coalition, with the support of the Greens, lifted the debt brake for defense spending and passed a so-called infrastructure package of 500 billion euro. This is not primarily intended for schools, hospitals, or public transport, but for preparation for war. Roads, bridges, railways, ports, and energy supplies are to be rebuilt so that Germany becomes fit for war again. The World Socialist website warned as early as March 2025 that the Special Infrastructure Fund served preparations for war directly and indirectly. With its new military strategy, the federal government has elevated preparations for war into a state program. Defense Minister Boris Pistorius and Inspector General Carsten Brauer presented a document in April according to which the Bundeswehr, the German military, is to be expanded by 2039 into the, quote, conventionally strongest army in Europe. The defense ministry declares that Germany must assume a military leadership role in NATO, defines Russia as the central threat, and asserts that the state, economy, and society are to be oriented towards war within the framework of, quote, comprehensive defense, unquote. Brauer unmistakably formulated Germany's claim to leadership, quote, "The military strategy follows the idea that Germany, as Europe's largest economy, must and will assume a leadership role in NATO in an increasingly complex and acute threat situation, including militarily," unquote. He said this was a paradigm shift in a, quote, "claim to shape events." The claim to shape events of German imperialism is global, but it is once again concentrated on the East. It must be stated openly. 85 years after the Nazi regime's invasion of the Soviet Union, Germany is de facto once again waging war against Russia. This has nothing to do with the defense of freedom and democracy against a Russian aggressor, but is the result of the long-term strategy of the ruling class, which is ever more aggressively pursuing its imperialist interests. As early as the beginning of 2014, Berlin, in close alliance with Washington, supported the coup in Kiev, which relied on fascist forces and brought a pro-Western regime to power. This regime intensified the confrontation with Russia and worked closely with NATO. Since the Russian invasion in February 2022, the NATO powers have systematically escalated the war. They are not seeking a diplomatic solution, but the military subjugation of Moscow and control over Ukraine and the entire Eastern European Eurasian region. With this renewed drive to the East, German imperialism is returning to its historic great power plans. Already in the First World War, control over resource-rich and geostrategically central Ukraine was among the declared war aims of the German Empire. In the Second World War, the Nazi regime took up these goals and radicalized them in the War of Annihilation against the Soviet Union, which claimed the lives of more than 27 million people. That German imperialism is prepared to commit similarly monstrous crimes is shown by its complicity in the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians and its support for the U.S.-Israeli war of aggression against Iran. Berlin is pursuing its own aims in this. It does not want to be a spectator in the redivision of the Middle East, but an active player. The federal government has therefore moved the Minehunter Fulda in the tender Mosul towards the Mediterranean in order to prepare for a possible deployment around the Strait of Hormuz. When Merz voices criticism of U.S. warfare, it is not because he opposes the war. Rather, the transatlantic post-war alliance is objectively breaking apart, and the German ruling class fears that Washington could escalate the situation strategically and economically in ways that would undermine central German interests. Above all, Berlin fears that an expanding war in the Middle East could undermine the most important front of its own imperialist ambitions, the NATO war against Russia and Ukraine, in which Germany and the European powers are increasingly assuming the leading role. To implement Germany's war and great power plans, enormous financial resources are being made available. At the end of April, the federal cabinet adopted the benchmarks for the 2027 federal budget and financial planning up to 2030. The defense budget is to rise to 105.8 billion euro in 2027. By 2030, almost 180 billion euro is planned in the core budget. Added to this are special funds and Ukraine aid, meaning the total war budget will exceed the 200 billion euro mark in the coming years. This comprehensive militarization is being financed through massive cuts, cynically sold as reforms. This is the social logic of militarism. Billions for war, cuts for workers, young people, the sick, and pensioners. Of the social gains historically won by the working class, nothing will remain at the end of this rearmament orgy unless the working class intervenes. The WSWS has shown in numerous articles that the attacks on citizens' allowance, pensions, healthcare, the public sector, and jobs are inseparably linked to the war budget. The Merz-Klingbeil government is preparing the most comprehensive attack on public healthcare since the introduction of statutory health insurance. At the same time, citizens' allowance is being effectively abolished and the entire welfare state placed under a funding proviso. It speaks volumes about the extremely reactionary aims of the ruling class that the media criticize Merz from the right despite this record. Their mantra is, rearmament and the attacks on the working class are not proceeding quickly or far enough. This campaign permits only one conclusion. The government is to act even more ruthlessly and, if necessary, bring the fascists directly on board. By the middle of the election campaign, Merz had already organized a majority in the Bundestag together with the AfD in order to further tighten asylum policy. In so doing, the Christian Democratic Union, or CDU, underscored that it was prepared to cooperate with the fascists. This did not prevent the Social Democratic Party, or SPD, from forming a coalition government with Merz, which, with the refugee policy of the notoriously right-wing interior minister Alexander Dobrindt of the Christian Social Union, or CSU, rearmament in the associated orgy of cuts is implementing core elements of the AfD's program. The SPD is not a break on this process, as the media portray it. In close cooperation with the trade unions, it is an important driving force behind the offensive against the working class. With Boris Pistorius in the Defense Ministry, Vice Chancellor Lars Klingbeil in the Finance Ministry, and Barbel Boss in the Labor Ministry, it controls the central levers of the war course and the social counter-revolution. As in the 1930s, the bourgeois parties are not standing in the way of a transfer of power to the fascists. Unlike Hitler's NSDAP, however, the AfD does not have a fascist mass base. Many workers vote for it out of hatred for the established parties and revulsion at their anti-working class policies. with their policies, the governing parties are creating the conditions under which the AFD can exploit anger and frustration. It is being deliberately positioned by the ruling class as a future party of government. This development shatters a myth of German post-war history, that fascism was a historical aberration under the extreme conditions of the Great Depression. Reality shows that in returning to fascism, the ruling class is responding to the deep crisis of capitalism. Just as it relies on Trump in the United States, it is once again relying on fascist forces in Germany to enforce rearmament, social devastation, and dictatorship against the resistance of the population. The Left Party plays a key role in this. It deliberately subordinates the strong opposition to war and social devastation to the Merz regime and German capitalism. It voted for the war credits in the Bundesrat and enabled Merz's rapid election as chancellor in the Bundestag. Since then, it has functioned as an extended arm of the government. On central issues, its line does not differ fundamentally from that of the government. It merely pushes for an even faster independence of German imperialism from Washington. The Socialist Equality Party has always stressed that the same capitalist crisis that drives the ruling class towards war, fascism, and dictatorship also drives the working class into struggle. 1 year after the installation of the Merz government, a growing strike wave and protest movement is developing internationally. In Germany, resistance is growing in auto and supplier plants against mass layoffs, wage cuts, and the sellouts by the trade union bureaucracy. Across Europe and worldwide, social opposition is increasing, intensified by the economic consequences of the Iran war, exploding prices, and the squandering of social resources on the war machine. It is especially significant that the class struggle is also developing in the United States, the very center of world imperialism. Internationally, the ruling elites are responding to the crisis of capitalism with war, dictatorship, and social cuts. The working class must respond with its own international strategy. The decisive question is that of political leadership. The resistance of the working class must be made conscious, united internationally, and oriented towards socialism. It must not be subordinated to the trade union bureaucracies, the pseudo-left organizations, or the established parties. It must be based on a revolutionary program. This is what the Socialist Equality Party, or Socialiste Gleichheitspartei, the German section of the International Committee of the Fourth International, is fighting for. In its election appeal for the Berlin election, the SGP states, "The decisive task is to give the class struggle, which is international in its very essence, an international form in a socialist perspective that does not accept the logic of capitalist exploitation. This requires a political struggle against the defenders of capitalism. It requires the building of a new workers' party." Just as the ruling class is reviving its reactionary traditions of imperialism, war, and fascism, the working class must revive its revolutionary, socialist, and internationalist traditions. The struggle is now assuming decisive importance. The development towards fascism and world war must be stopped. The Merz regime and the ruling class in Germany can no more be pressured and forced into better policies than Trump and the fascist oligarchy in the United States. They must be overthrown by the working class and replaced by workers' governments. We call on all readers, register as active supporters of the SGP. Read the World Socialist website, study our historical and political material, and become a member of the SGP. Only on the basis of an international socialist program can the working class stop war, fascism, and capitalism. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.